Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
Lowe's knows that more projects mean more tools. For a limited time, new and existing MyLowe's Rewards credit card members can get 12-month special financing on purchases of $299 or more, in-store and online. Don't wait to get the things you need. Get special financing today. Lowe's. We help. You save. Now through August 27th, choose 12-month special financing on purchases of $299 or more. Offer subject to credit approval and cannot be combined. Minimum monthly payments required. See store or Lowe's.com for details.
Hey everybody, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to Beekeeping for Newbies. Thank you. Just thanks. Appreciate you. All right. So glad to see everybody here today. You're all looking great. I want to especially thank you, my favorite listener. Appreciate you being here. Today, we're going to talk about some fun things. God, there's so much going on, man. I was in the doctor's office this morning. And I was like, hey, we got to talk about this ADHD thing, man, because I am all over the map. So anyway, we'll see how that goes. But thank you so much to all the Buy Me a Coffee supporters out there: Aaron, Mike, Jay, Michelle, Joe, Sherry, Scott, Andrew, DJ, Melissa, and Amy. And if I missed you, please let me know. I don't want to leave anybody out. Today's warm up song is "Real World," brought to you by Matchbox 20. And feel free to hit us up over at Beekeeping for Newbies. It's newbees.com. And there's a link to the Discord room there. If you're not familiar with Discord, we have several folks who have no idea what that is. Think of it as just like a big chat room, a place where you can go and talk about bees. You can talk about non-bee related things and whatever you want to do. We have people sharing pictures of cute pets, and we have a gardening section. We have a gaming section. And I think the most recent channel that we added inside there was about making wax products. So feel free to join us over there if you'd like to chat it up about whatever's going on. When you join, you will be by default dropped into a channel that, like, you're going to see nothing. The only thing you're going to see is a channel called Read This First. You go through, you read the 6 or 7 rules of the room. If you agree, you type YES into the little thing saying that you agree to the terms of the room. And then we will pretty quickly move you over into the permissions group so you can see everything. So we'd love to have you over there checking things out. And then also bestbeekeepinggear.com. That's where I'm kind of centralizing, using it as a bit of a repository to store things that I write up on various topics. So whenever something comes up, like we have a lot of Varroa discussions. So we have like a Varroa section. We have sections in there talking about the dribble method, the vaporization method for oxalic acid. There's a few other things in there. We just try to put as much in there that is relevant as possible. A lot of times I try and tie them to an episode if I can. It's a lot of work, so I don't necessarily get to it as much as I'd like to, but there's probably about 20-25 articles over there. Feel free to check that out. And then of course there's youtube.com/@beekeepingfornewbies, and remember, it's newbees. Okay, well, as everybody knows, it has been pretty stinking hot lately. Of course, this is talking about the U.S. here, but it's just been, it's weird. I mean, the spring was really wet. A lot of people lost a lot of bees. We had a lot of disruption to nectar flows, and a lot of our pollen and things were washed away, and bees were stuck inside without a good food source. So that was pretty crazy, but these storms have just been kind of relentless this year. So it's between the storms and the heat, it just seems like it's never ending here. So I wanted to talk today about some things that we can kind of do to help the bees during some of these really hot days. And at the end, I do have a quick Varroa note that I want to talk to you guys about that's really important. But before we jump into everything, I want to talk briefly about something I've been experiencing. So I want to apologize to everyone. And this goes to anyone who is a new beekeeper And I would say, you know, it doesn't matter how long you've been keeping bees, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, whatever it might be. I'm so, so sorry. I have no idea why the beekeeping community is so self-sabotaging. Like, I can't explain this. I have no idea why we do what we do to ourselves. But as you guys probably know, like, you don't see me in any forums. You don't see me anywhere talking to other beekeepers and beekeeping, you know, online groups and things. The reason for that is because every time I go into them, it's a disaster. And I told you guys about, you know, what I experienced a couple months ago. I'm like, all right, I'm out. The other day, I had to turn off notifications on my phone because I don't use Facebook personally at all. I secured the name just to kind of protect the name, but I really don't, you know, for beekeeping for newbies, but I don't use it for anything. But I had notifications on because if somebody messages and they have a question or whatever, I do still want to be able to respond. And I'm getting all these stupid notifications. It's notifying me for things that are just completely ridiculous and useless. But one of them popped up and it ended up being like a beekeeping related notification. And I went in and I read it. And it was a question about a frame. And someone had posted a picture of their frame from their hive. And this is a really tough thing to deal with because as a new beekeeper, I recognize that you don't really know exactly what somebody who's going to help you needs to see. So you're not exactly sure, like, how detailed, how close do I need to zoom in, how far out should I be? You know, these things are all kind of things you don't really know and haven't figured out yet. So we're looking at a picture of a frame that's okay, but not necessarily as good as I would like it to be to provide a real diagnosis. But I look at the frame. I said, okay, well, it looks like this is going on in my mind. I had an idea. And I start reading the comments. I go, well, let me go back and look. And I'm like, I don't think it's that. And then I keep reading the comments. And I mean, within like, I don't know, 3 or 4 hours, there's like 80 comments in there, probably 5 or 6 different relatively plausible narratives, but I think one person got it right. One person was like, hey, it's this. And someone else is like, 100%. And then everybody else was way out in left field. And I'm thinking to myself, like, okay, well, this one's a little bit more challenging. It's a tiny bit more challenging. But here's the thing. What I do is I recognize my own limitations. I know that I don't know everything. And if I don't know something, I'm going to do one of a couple things. I'm going to say, wow, that's really interesting. Like, there is something I learned today. I'll tell you guys about it later on. But I will read. I will go and I'll read documentation. I'll find the answer. And I'll say, oh, okay, cool. So this is what that means or how that works or whatever. Or I'm just going to flat out say, hey, you know, I have no idea. I really don't know what that is or how that works. Now, the alternative might be in between, where it's like, oh man, you know, I haven't talked about or thought about that in a long time. And I really don't remember. I think it's this right here, but I'm not 100%. Let me double check or whatever. There are a lot of people who basically just, they come right out and they might be 20 or 30, 50% sure. And they come out with the confidence of like Jesus Christ himself, like, and this is the way it is, you know, like they come out and they're like, boom, this is it right here. This is the answer. No qualifying, you know, the statement at all to say like, hey, I'm not sure. Or, hey, I think somebody said this once, but I don't really know. Or I heard somebody say, but can't verify. None of that stuff. Just pure 100% confidence. Like, this is the way it is. And I get it if that's a one-off. Like, you just happen to go into a room and the day that you go in there, like, one person makes a weird comment about something and you're like, I don't think that's right. I've done it 3 times. There was the one a couple months ago. There was one like about 4 days ago and one like 2 days ago, something like that. It's the same thing. Every single time I go in, nobody has consensus. I'm saying, like, you could hold up a brood frame with nothing but brood on it. And I'm willing to bet you're going to get at least 2, maybe 4 or 5 different answers. Like, I'm so sorry. I am so sorry that all of you who are new have to come in and contend with that. I used to think like, man, I really did this the wrong way. I should have had a mentor. I should have, learned from somebody who knew better than me, learning the hard way, figuring out everything on my own. That wasn't the best way to go. I don't know. I'm starting to rethink it because at least I had a chance to learn from experience and read a book and then try something and see what worked and didn't, versus immersing myself in this world of like misinformation crap. It's terrible. It is so bad. So I really have a newfound appreciation and respect and feeling of turmoil for all of you out there who have to contend with this. I didn't know it was this bad. Again, I'm not a big social person, so I don't see the same things that a lot of you guys see, but I'm really sorry about that. Okay, well, we can't fix it, so that it is what it is here. So we're going to go ahead and move on, and we are going to talk about hive ventilation, things that maybe help, things that don't help, some of the controversy around it, and all that good stuff. Obviously, when it's hot outside, we go outside, we recognize how hot it is. The bees are in the same situation, and they have to contend with it a little bit differently, than we do. I think we're going to start by talking about maybe something bad that can happen. If a colony of bees gets really, really hot and crowded, they can abscond. I mean, they can actually just pack up and leave. Now, I do not have a lot of experience with this. I have not had, I cannot think of a time in the summertime where my colonies, where my bees have gotten so hot that they've actually absconded from the hive. But again, you get a really densely populated hive and you get extreme summer heat. And it's not typically like, oh, wow, we had a really hot day. My bees are gone. It's usually prolonged. If they are experiencing a prolonged condition, 3, 4, 5, 10 days, they start to say, okay, this is not going to work. Now, recognizing that the possibility exists, not the most common thing. Now, the way that a lot of people like to mitigate this, because we as humans, we have this idea, and this idea is, I know what I like, and I know what makes me comfortable, and I think my bees are just like me, so I need to do everything the same way that I would want it to be if I were the bee. So we're going to get central heat, air conditioning, fireplace. We want to try to make everything just the same. And unfortunately, it doesn't really work that well for bees. They have a system in place that actually works really, really well, and it's very effective. So depending on your theory of how everything was created, you can at least agree that for thousands or tens of thousands of years, bees kind of figured it out, right? Before people were keeping bees in Langstroth hives, like they had it figured out. They've got a system in place that works. And this kind of speaks to more broadly to, sometimes less is more in beekeeping. But I want to talk about ventilation. So what a lot of people like to do, myself included, by the way, I am in this club. You've heard me talk about different types of ventilation options I use. One of them is that vented inner cover that I have talked about many, many times. I still love this thing. And what's so funny is I threw together like a 5-minute video on this thing done a couple years ago. And I think it had like 50 or 60 views. It was really funny. And then all of a sudden, like within the past, I don't know what it was, 2 months, it just went vertical. Like everybody's trying to figure out how to cool their hives off right now. But it's pretty neat. You have this top section, for those that aren't familiar with this, is a top section that you can put a block of insulation, about a 2-inch block of insulation in the wintertime. Helps to retain a little bit of the heat up there. And gives a platform for the condensation to kind of form against and then run off to the sides versus dripping down directly onto the bees. And it has 3-6. It has probably about like 10 vent holes with some hardware cloth over it just to, again, allow some of that hot air to escape. Using that in conjunction with a screened bottom board, those things can definitely allow, some air to kind of to come in and flow through a little bit. And then there's the other thing that I do sometimes too, which I'm actually going to do a video on that today. Hopefully by the time you're listening to this, the video is already up. But even though we have a 95 plus degree day today, I think the heat index is like 105. But we're going to push forward and get this done anyway. It's a screened entrance reducer. So we talk a lot about how important it is to keep those entrances tight when you're going into a dearth. So if you are in or approaching a dearth in your area, a period where there is not a nectar flow, or even if you are feeding, you want to restrict the entrance size to that hive to reduce the possibility, probability, and likelihood of being robbed. Well, of course, when you put a big entrance reducer on, you're also impacting airflow. But going with the screened entrance reducer, this is going to allow you to kind of provide both. You get the protection and some ventilation. So I'm going to do that video today. In fact, as soon as I upload this episode today, I'm walking outside and we're getting that video done. But what I always say, and you'll hear me talk about this a lot, because we're going to talk about two sides of this discussion. There's the we need to ventilate everything side. Now, the things I've told you about, those are the only things I will ever do. The vented inner cover, screen bottom board, vented entrance, that's it. We'll talk more about that in a minute. But I always say this, and you'll hear me a lot. I say, what do the bees have in the wild, right? In the wild, the bees prefer a cavity that's somewhere in that like 40 to 42 liter kind of size. They like an entrance to be in the lower one third of that. They'd like the entrance to be somewhere between like an inch and a half to 2 inches, inch and three quarters, somewhere in there. Any other entrances, they will propolize them shut. And I think I mentioned this, but lower third. Yeah, so lower third. So those are the characteristics that they want. Now, you have to remember a Langstroth hive is very different. It does have a different sort of insulative profile to it. So I'm not exactly being fair 100% when I say what do bees do in the wild? Well, let's just mimic that, because you got to remember in a tree, you've got the side walls, which depending on how much of it is hollowed out, you should still be able to get at least an R2, R4, maybe R5, somewhere in there, of a rating on the sides if you have a thicker wall. But the areas above and below, I mean, you can still have a really solid tree in those areas, which would provide some insulation from the sun. You know, we have these Langstroth hives sitting out in the sun. The sun is beating down on the top. So there is going to be some difference to that temperature, which I think I definitely can concede that. But I still believe that the bees have this figured out, and we're going to dive into that here in just a minute. But the one thing I would say is try to get yourself just at least a little bit out of the mindset that I have to make their home like my home, that we're two different animals. They're small, cold-blooded. We're big, obnoxious, warm-blooded. Lots of differences, a whole lot of differences functionally, biologically, etc. Very, very different things.
Buying a car in Carvana was so easy. I was able to finance it through them.
Whoa, wait, you mean finance?
Yeah, finance. Got pre-qualified for a Carvana auto loan, entered my terms, and shopped from thousands of great car options all within my budget.
That's cool that financing through Carvana was so easy.
Financed. Done. And I get to pick up my car from their Carvana vending machine tomorrow.
Financed.
Right, that's what I said.
You can spend time trying to pronounce financing, or you can actually finance and buy your car today on
Carvana.
Financing subject to credit approval. Additional terms and conditions may apply.
So let's go ahead and talk about how bees cool the hive naturally. Like, what do they do? Now, what they do, let's just, 9,500 degree day, what they're doing inside that hive, it's not random. It's not just arbitrary. Like, they have a very coordinated system. It's pretty unique, in nature. But the bees are definitely not passive when it's hot. They've evolved a bunch of different kind of techniques to manage the temperatures, to manage airflow, and they also use water as a really big component of this. I would say that probably the most important piece of this is the evaporative cooling that they do using water. So basically, some of the foragers are going to be dedicated, just like you have bees out there collecting, pollen and nectar and whatever else they need, you will have foragers who are just out looking for water. And then once they come into the hive, they will deposit or spread or disperse these little droplets in different places throughout the hive. And then you have the bees who will fan. So they will come in and they will fan across that that water. And when I say fanning, I mean they're like, it looks like they're flying kind of like an airplane on the tarmac getting ready to take off, but it's in neutral kind of thing. That's what they do. They just, it's buzzing and the wings are moving, but they're just not going anywhere. And that air moving across that water creates the evaporative cooling. So if you ever heard of like a swamp cooler, it's kind of like the bee version of a swamp cooler. So one of the reasons that this is really important is, you know, brood development really needs to be like in the mid 90s Fahrenheit. So I think that's going to be like, what's that, like 32, 33 or so Celsius, something like that. So if it gets too hot, yeah, the bees get uncomfortable and everything, but the larvae are really sensitive. Larvae and in that pupal stage, they are sensitive to extremes in temperature. Obviously, if they get too cold, you end up with bees that are stopped. You know, they stop the work side of things, and they will come over them to provide warmth over, you know, the developing brood. If it's too hot, they need to be cooled. So the colony's ability to manage temperature, it directly impacts everything for their long-term strength, survival, development. And it's pretty wild, kind of talking about how the air is distributed through the whole process, right? There's no like master thermostat where it's like, boom, okay, we're going to go here. Everybody, we're going to this temperature. Every worker will respond to kind of conditions in their own area. They will adjust their behavior based on the temperature, the humidity, the airflow. Some are bringing in water, some are fanning, some are clustering or moving around. It's instead of like a centralized HVAC system, it's like a decentralized HVAC, but this is the system that's been in place for a really long time. So it seems to be working. So this is why quite often you'll see what we call bearding. Now, this is funny. Randy Oliver and I got into a discussion about this when we were, when I had him on last year. It was really funny because I was telling him, I use a vented inner cover and I use the screen bottom board. And he goes, well, like, why? And I said, well, to provide additional ventilation to cool things off. And he's like, why? And I said, I don't know. They're bearding all over the place. And he was 100% right. I mean, bearding is not a big deal. Yes, there are bees outside the hive. Yes, there are bees that could theoretically be, you know, if you are in an area that have a lot of the European hornets or the Asian hornets, they could, you know, swing by, or the bald-faced hornet could swing by and pluck one off here and there. But the reality is that it's just not a huge big deal to have some bearding. Now, again, if you're new, you're completely new here, think about a big, long, thick, full beard, and then kind of like Photoshop that at the entrance of a beehive, but replace the hair with bees. That's sort of what it looks like. And they're not just hanging out. They're not just bored. This is actually their way of getting out of the way inside the hive because of being congested, and it allows for better airflow. Fewer bees inside the hive means less body heat. Yeah, they'll be present, and of course, more room to ventilate. Now, this is something I think is one of the coolest things in the world. I don't know. I haven't researched it outside of honeybees to know if other insects or other animals in any capacity do something similar. But bees do something called heat shielding. So they will literally go into an area where it's really hot, and they can absorb the heat from that area into their body, crawl or fly to a cooler part of the hive, and then release that heat. It's like they're like a walking heat sink. I'm just completely baffled by this. And what's crazy about it is there's not like a director. There's not like the queen doesn't micromanage this. It's not like there's a head nurse bee or a head other bee going, all right, Katie, going over there and take care of that. Rachel, I need you on the backside. Like that's not taking place. They're just innately driven by this. It's so amazing to me. I'm just baffled. How do they know, like, okay, it's time to absorb some heat? And they do. They take it in, they go somewhere else, and they release the heat. I just think that's wild. I mean, there's probably a lot of people listening right now going, dude, it's not that big of a deal. I think it's cool. So, and remember, these habits, these actions that bees take when they're performing these different functions and roles, Like, this is them saying, this is what we know how to do based on our survival for the past however many years. And then what we do is say, hey, cool, I'm glad you guys have figured out this great way to survive. Hey, try to see if you can figure out how to survive in my box. And then we put them in a Langstroth hive and say, go. It's going to be different. They've got to figure out a new way of doing things. They've got to adapt to this new world that has full sun on the top, not very thick side walls, a big open area underneath. A lot of things are different. So then we have to ask the question, well, if the bees can regulate the hive, they can regulate the temperature through evaporative cooling, why do we add ventilation? When we add a screened bottom board and we add a vented inner cover and we add a screened entrance reducer, does that kind of, is that like having the air conditioner on your house on full blast and a bunch of windows open? Like, are we actually making it worse? So with that, I think we're going to add this in as an experiment for my next year's set of experiments. I think we got about a dozen of them on the list already. So we're going to experiment with this next summer, and we're going to go full bottom board with entrance reducer down to probably 2 inches, no inner cover, and I'm sorry, inner cover, but no vented inner cover. And we're going to run the temperature probes and we're going to see what happens. Because this is, I mean, it's a scientific project that can easily be measured. We can take sample data. We can use control groups. There's all these things we can do to provide a relatively scientific explanation here. So I think we should pursue that, and that'll be on the list. Now, one thing I want to point out, there are a lot of people that I have seen suggesting this approach. And, you know, I always tell you, it doesn't matter who's right or wrong. Like, I can be 100% right in what I'm telling you. It doesn't matter. I want your bees to live long and to be healthy. I want you to have fun. And whatever your goals are, I want you to achieve them. I'm giving you advice based on my experience and what I know. You may do something completely different and it may work great. I think that if you're doing something different from what I'm telling you in some ways, specifically like we're talking about or about to talk right now, I think you're opening the door and introducing some risk. A lot of people will say things like, oh, take a popsicle stick and cut it and then put that between your inner and outer cover. And that provides ventilation. And oh, wow, ever since I did this, it's been great. So think about that. Like, think about the thickness of a popsicle stick. So that thickness across the top, that's what's going to save the day? Like a popsicle stick. A popsicle stick at the top between the inner and outer cover all the way around. So maybe like, what, 4 of them maybe to keep it even? That's what's going to save the colony. Because to me, what I see is a really easy point of entry for cockroaches, small hive beetles, wax moth, ants, everything else. There is a reason the bees propolize everything shut. There's a reason why they like that cavity to be a certain way. I promise you, sticking a popsicle stick or multiple popsicle sticks in between the inner and outer cover has more downside to it than upside. I would strongly discourage you from doing that. Do whatever you feel best. Now, what I will say is, access to water is probably the most important thing when it comes to helping the bees regulate, thermoregulate the hive, and to perform, you know, that evaporative cooling. They've absolutely got to have water. Now, my instinct in my gut is to say they need access to good, clean water. But as I have said many times before, and I've showed it in video, and I think I've posted pictures at some point in time, I have had bees, like, where I put a nice little bucket of clean, fresh water out, set it down on the ground. They would rather fly down and drink it out of a puddle on the ground where I spilled some, where it's dirty, funky, and gross, than they would to actually drink the nice, fresh water that I've got for them. Now, that's not always the case, but find a way to make sure they have water, even if it is good, fresh water that happens to be in a dirty puddle. Whatever works, make sure they've got it. Now, there's people who have done different things, and I think that I would say one of the bigger things you want to be mindful of is when you're putting water out, what does it take? Is it like 72 hours or something like that before you'll have young mosquito larvae in there that are trying to, you know, get ready to emerge a few days later? Mosquitoes are going to get all over that. Now, there are certain tabs, I think, that you can place, a little tablet kind of things you put in the water. And it doesn't make it toxic, so I think that the bees can still consume it, but it does not allow the larvae to develop of the mosquitoes. I'm not 100% on the safe for bees part of that, so definitely check the labels before you try anything. What I used to do is I would just change the water like every 2 or 3 days, and that usually takes care of that. But a lot of people have done like bird baths. They'll take a regular bird bath, and they'll just, you know, sprinkle a whole bunch of rocks in it so the bees have a place to stand. You can do a, you know, something that is a container of some sort, and you can have some floats in it. Anything that's like a light, you know, balsa wood, or you can fill it with straw. That's another common way to do it, is a big, you know, handful of straw and push it in. The bees will walk up and down the straw. You know, again, you just want to keep an eye on them, make sure that if, you know, in these hot days, a lot of that is just going to get baked off by the sun. So try to refill those periodically and make sure that they get freshened up. And like I said, bird baths, shallow trays, you know, whatever comes to mind, be creative. So I think that that's about all that I have for you on this heat-related discussion. Like I said, there's not a lot that you can really do, and there's not necessarily a lot you have to do. The one thing I didn't mention too, you can also, if you're not in a flow and you're not worrying about them building comb in random places, you can always throw like a medium or a deep. You can throw another box on the inside just to kind of give some space up top and let that hot air rise up if you want to. I don't do that a lot. It just doesn't seem like it's always necessary, but it is an option that you could certainly give a try. Okay, well, I think that's going to... Oh, one last thing. I forgot about this one. I told you at the beginning we were going to talk about this. For those of you who have been slacking off at all on your mite washes and your Varroa treatments, I really need you to get it together and get this done. So, you know, this is not a drill. This is a real exercise here. You need to get a handle on the mites right away. And quite frankly, I mean, you're almost borderline really too late. I mean, you're coming up here. We're a couple days away from August. Even if you get your mite counts low, let's say that you haven't done any treatments. You have a standard thing and you're like, I treat every February and every August. There is a really, really good chance if you wait until right now, you can go out August 1st, do a mite wash and see 14. And you can do whatever treatment you like to do. On August 10th, you check again, your mite count is 2. And you're like, woo, all right, my mites are exactly where they need to be. I'm 2 or less per 100. Isn't that great? And then by September, October, your colony's dead. The viral loads can get incredibly high regardless of your mite counts. Or if you like to really use proper English, irregardless. That's not proper English anyway. But regardless of whether or not you get the mite numbers under control, the viral load can be absolutely through the roof, even with low numbers. And this is the time of year where those things start to pop up. So you're going to start seeing the deformed wing virus and, you know, some of your other acute bee paralysis and, you know, all these things that we have documented pretty well over there on Best Beekeeping Gear in the Varroa section. These things are going to start popping up and it's going to get... going to get worse. So try to get a handle on that right away. And let's not make all that work you've done, you know, all your research from last year, all your work this past spring, everything you've done early part of the summer, you know, let's try to not make that all for nothing. Okay, everybody, thank you again to all of you who support the podcast, the YouTube, and all the hard work we're doing over here to try to bring beekeeping to the rest of the world and to keep everybody educated. I am going to go outside and sweat the backside off and get this screened entrance reducer video knocked out. So I'm not sure what we're going to talk about next, but we'll figure something out. Take care. Be kind to one another. Remember that I love you. There's nothing you can do about it. We'll talk to you soon.